The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. MidwayUSA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into the Focus Hunting Podcast. Before we get started with today's podcast, I want to take a few minutes and talk about our local hunting and fishing stores. With the holidays right around the corner, I want to remind everyone to shop local. Support your local outdoor shops. These guys have always been there when we needed them, so it's time for us to step up. On my last whitetail trip, actually, I was doing my gear checklist 2 days before I was set to leave, as usual. I realized I needed some new lighted nocks for my arrows. So I ran down to see Ken at Hardcore Archery here in Kelowna, grabbed some new nocks, and I was good to go. You know, if those guys weren't around, I would have been screwed. Well, I mean, I guess I could have used unlighted nocks, but, you know, that would have thrown my FOC off a bit, and they would have been harder to see. But, you know, look, the point is, these guys have always been there when we needed them, so now it's our turn to be there for them. So, you know, these big box stores, they're going to survive. So if you guys are listening to this, write in, give me the name of your local hunting or fishing shop. I'm going to reach out to them. And before every podcast, until December 25th, I'm going to help promote your local hunting and fishing store. So if you guys are listening to this and you want to help out your store, write me at info@focushunting.ca. I want to welcome you guys to the Focus Hunting Podcast. On this episode, I'm joined by one of the co-founders of the Outfitter Coffee Company. If you guys are unfamiliar with Outfitter Coffee, they're a great group of guys who have found a unique way to give back to conservation. By now, you're all aware of Hunters for BC and the great work they do in this province. So if you guys aren't already members of BC's Interior Chapter of SDI, I strongly urge you to go to their website, check out the great work that they're doing, and join today. Also, if you guys go to the Focus Hunting page, we've got some cool new gear coming out, so be sure to go there and check that out.
Things are strange, right? I think we're supposed to be a hotbed for COVID-19.
Yeah.
I know you're in Canada, but here in the United States, you know, of course, we came from what we were called a red state, which is a conservative state, to a blue state recently in our politics, and that's been a big surprise for a lot of people who live here. And, you know, just as the politics flip on a regular basis here in the state, so does our weather. You know, 2 days ago, I was down in South Georgia with a T-shirt and shorts on, and now I'm back in North Georgia with a really thick jacket on because it was snowing yesterday.
Yeah, quite the change, yeah.
We
live in Canada, so we're already in the cold weather.
I was going to say, you have a pretty long winter out there, right?
Yeah, we definitely do. We're not as bad in Kelowna here as some parts of the country, but definitely a lot colder than you get down there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
In the midst of the election, how's everything settled down so far? I know up here there was a lot of consternation about the U.S. election.
So for us, during every 4 years, or at least every changing of a president, there's always temporary turmoil, right? Of course, Trump is a little bit more vocal about this year's election, but eventually it'll all come to pass. We'll survive, just like any other time we'll survive. You know, whether half the country believes that we are rightfully moving forward or not, doesn't really matter. In the end, you know, as I guess diverse in ideals as us Americans are, we truly are one people in the end. And I think that we'll eventually be able to at least calm down and reunite for the purposes of the media, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. Well, that's good. I know here in Canada, we seem to follow the U.S. election, I think, more than we follow our own. So.
Well, I mean, it's tabloid material, right?
Yeah. Okay. So I'd like to welcome everyone to another episode of the Focus Hunting Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Ten Dang. Ten is the co-founder of the Outfitter Coffee Company. Ten, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, no problem.
Can you give us a bit of introduction to yourself?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, academically, I have a legal background. I studied law for many years of my life, and I never ended up practicing law. I wanted to do something else. Ever since I was a kid, I didn't want to work for anybody, didn't want to work for a firm. So I had always been an entrepreneur, right? And I've always started businesses here and there, and I was a successful brand development entrepreneur for about 10 years. And, you know, as somebody who grew up fishing and hunting, I wanted to do something that could return back to my hobby while running a business at the same time. As you know, you're having us here on podcast Outfitters Coffee Company. We're a coffee company that gives back to wildlife conservation. And I want to start a company that gave back to wildlife conservation, because whether if this is happening in your country or not, in Canada, in the United States, it is, right? Is that our numbers of anglers and hunters are declining every single year. And as those numbers decline, we sell less licenses. Selling less licenses means that there's less funding for our Department of Natural Resources to take care of our wildlife as well as our public lands. So the only way for us to really bring those numbers back up, or at least to try to conserve the numbers that we have now, is to create an outreach company that hits a couple of things, right? Is that coffee it's a commodity. Everybody drinks it. Doesn't matter what political spectrum you're on. I get it. Not everybody drinks coffee, but a lot of people do. And we want to be able to provide a product to where our demographic are doing and sharing the same things that we do and share. That means hunting, fishing, and drinking coffee. So we decided to start a coffee company that not only sold good coffee, ethically sourced coffee, organically grown coffee, but at the same time, take a good percentage of our proceeds and return that back to wildlife conservation groups that we believe in to help continue to preserve and conserve our traditions. I know that's getting into the company's background, but as far as my background is concerned, I've always been a serial entrepreneur. I've grown up fishing, I've grown up hunting, and I've continued to do that as an adult. So I want to be able to give these traditions to my kids when they grow up and to my grandkids as well, same as yours and everybody else who's buying Outfitters Coffee, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely it does. Up here in Canada, we have seen a decline in hunter numbers compared to the past. In the early 80s, we had over double the annual resident licenses sold. Those numbers were on a steady decline until I think the early 2000s, where we started to see an upshift. We started having really positive numbers around 2015, 2016, but over the past couple of years, it sort of dropped back down again. Now with COVID, I think we're going to see a spike again. I know there was an article out earlier in the year reporting that BC resident hunt licenses were up, so we'll see. Now in Canada, well in BC anyway, the funds collected from licenses and tags goes into the province's general kitty. They are not designated specifically back into the wildlife management in this province. The annual funding for wildlife management is set in accordance to its annual budget. Our wildlife management leans a great deal on nonprofit organizations such as Hunters for BC. Now in the U.S., your hunter numbers are a lot higher than ours in Canada as your population is a lot greater. So you have a bit more money to put back into wildlife and land management. However, there are some policies you have developed down there. Two in particular, I think we here in Canada should adapt, and that is what you have in the Dingle Johnson and Pittman Robertson's Acts, whereas, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in the Dingle Johnson Act, you guys charge a 10% exercise tax on all sports fishing goods, and in the Dingle Johnson, you charge 11% exercise tax on all guns, ammo, and archery sales. That money's put back into each state's wildlife management, so I think that's something we should look at doing here in Canada as well. But moving on to Outfitter Coffee. Now, there's a few of you involved with Outfitter Coffee Company. I've communicated with two of them, Nathan Scott and Brian Shaler.
You got those two guys, correct. Nathan Scott and Brian Shaler are two of my partners.
Right.
We're actually probably the largest small business that you'll come across. We've been around, I guess, for a little bit over a year at this point, and we have 6 full-time partners and a couple of auxiliary partners. We also have Levi Mitchell, Terrence Cheney, and Barton Rice, in addition to Nathan Scott and Brian Shaler. We also have another partner that he wishes to not be named that actually goes around the world and sources our beans for us. Yeah.
Cool. Right,
so we're pretty large for, you know, again, a small size company.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome, man. You mentioned that hunting and fishing has always been intrinsic in your life. Would you say you're more of a hunter or more of a fisherman?
So it kind of flip flops back and forth. My grandfather was a fisherman. My parents and my grandparents, they were Vietnamese, and they immigrated to the United States in 1980s. Before then, they were all fishermen. That's what they did for a living in Vietnam. By maybe a little bit backstory here that isn't quite related, but it'll lead up into it. My grandfather used to live in a village in Vietnam where they had pooled all their money together for him to build a vessel to escape communist Vietnam. And my grandfather wasn't just a fisherman. He was also a carpenter. He ended up building a pretty large ship where he took his entire village and his family to escape Vietnam in the middle of the night to go over to the Philippines, to land in Cabon, Philippines. That ship and that group of people were actually known as the 88 Cabon, because including my grandfather, he saved 87 other people out of communist Vietnam to go to the Philippines. When they came over to the United States, my grandfather, you know, he held odd and end jobs here and there. He actually worked for a cement factory for what I could remember for a couple of years of my younger life. But most of his time was spent fishing. So were my uncles. And when I was younger, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, we didn't have the internet, or we didn't have really high access to video games or technology, right? So most of my time was spent going out on the boats with them, learning how to fish, you know, crab, and basically to use the ocean to our advantage. You know, my grandfather came over here poor, but we were always well fed, because not only did he build his own skiff when he came to the United States, but he was always out fishing and shrimping. And, you know, the freezers in the fridge was always full. So I grew up learning how to do that. Now, very few of the people in my family actually hunted. My uncle did. And he became an avid hunter, where his shed was just filled with racks after racks. And I picked up hunting from him. And being here in the state of Georgia, we have some of the best public lands to hunt on. You know, there are several states here in the United States where you really have to find private land to hunt. But in my state, where I live in Georgia, we have a lot of free public land to where we just purchase a license and we can go into any of these public lands when they're available to hunt and take deer or any other type of game that we'd like for, well, practically free, right? So I got into hunting a lot. I moved away from the coast because originally I was born and raised coast Georgia. And then I moved to North Georgia, to Atlanta, the state's capital, and we have a lot of mountains out here, but at the same time, we have a lot of hunting lands. And I had stopped fishing for quite some time, but for some reason, I decided to take up fishing again. But these days, it's primarily freshwater fishing in the lake. And quite frankly, do I hunt or do I fish more? That's a little tough to say, right? Once it gets too cold, I put the boat up, but at the same time, once it gets too hot, I put a rifle up. But for the most part, I do both year round.
Right, right. Deer hunter, I presume? Whitetail?
Deer, hogs, and coyotes.
Deer, hogs, and coyotes. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. I've never been hog hunting, but I've always wanted to do it. But we get elk hunting out here, so I guess it's an even trade-off.
Which, by the way, you know, I wish we would have elk hunting in Georgia. I know that for the most part, farmers in the northern part of the state don't want them here. All of our surrounding states are now starting to build a very strong elk population. You know, in the west of the United States, as you may know, in Colorado and California, in those areas, we have a lot of elk and elk hunting out there. Here in the East Coast, we have elk tags that are available in the state of Tennessee and the state of Kentucky, but they're very low in numbers. However, the states that are also surrounding us, which is Tennessee and North Carolina, are starting to build up their population. Hopefully, we'll start to see a stronger population within the next decade or two, to where we can have relatively open elk season for all of the states around us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, have you ever been elk hunting?
Unfortunately not.
No, yeah, it's pretty neat. Up in BC here, we have pretty much all species, I think. Well, not all, but a lot of the species you can find in North America we have in our province, so we're pretty fortunate. Outfitter Coffee, you kind of touched on when and how it started. Why the name Outfitter Coffee?
Well, you know, outfitters are known to outfit hunters and anglers to prepare for their trip, right?
Yes, they are. The outfitters are a big part of the hunting community, I believe.
Oh, absolutely. And part of that preparation is, quite frankly, a good breakfast and good coffee. Yeah, not all of us would drink coffee, but many of us do. I don't know how early you guys up there start your hunt, or you personally start your hunt, but this year I've regularly woke up at 2 a.m., 1 a.m., 3 a.m. to go hunt, right? So having a great cup of coffee is something that's really important, because it's sure you can buy crappy coffee and chug it down all you want, but having a cup of coffee that is just right, not too pretentious, but at the same time gives back to something that you love doing, I think is valuable. You know, for all of my partners and myself in this business, we didn't start this coffee company to become some conglomerate brand where we were maximizing profit margins for the sake of the shareholders of the company. We want to make sure that we kept all of the superfluous costs down and maximize our net income so that we can take the most amount of money and put that back to the different foundations that we donate to, right? And that's where it really matters. You know, I was just talking about how I hope that we'll have a great elk population in the East Coast to hunt 10 and 20 years from now, but that's all really dependent on having those public lands available to hunt, right? So, you know, you had mentioned a couple of facts that gives sporting good revenue back to wildlife management in the United States. But the reality of business and government is this, right, is that we don't know how that money is being allocated, how it's being controlled. We know that there aren't enough rangers to cover enough square footage of wildlife lands anywhere in the United States. Poachers can go in and destroy our wildlife population. I know in California and Texas and those southwestern states also have problems with cartels coming in destroying wildlife lands because they're using herbicide and insecticide to grow marijuana, for example, right? So we know that our wildlife lands are not being protected well enough because we don't have enough funds. Sure. Look, the sporting goods industry is a huge industry in the United States. And if a percentage of that revenue is actually going towards wildlife conservation, you know, we should really be doing a better job. And not that our guys on the ground aren't doing a great job. They're just stretched so thin that they don't have the resources to do that. So guess who's left doing that? It's the private companies, right? The nonprofit organizations who are boots on the ground, who are going to the rivers, going to the woods, monitoring quality of life, quality of water, and whatever else that they're taking care of. And those guys also need funding, but those guys don't always get funding from our government. So
Absolutely. Who's
left to fund that? It's
yeah.
the private industry. So that's why we started the company, because we want to not just – we know us alone, we can't take care of everything. We can't take care of the entire industry, the entire cause. We want to spark that initial interest in saying, all right, well, if we can do something altruistic, we know that other people can come on board and do the same thing and support these private nonprofit organizations to help them accomplish what they're trying to do so that our lands and our waters are protected.
No, that's great. I know the nonprofit organizations, they do so much up here and obviously down there too, but they just don't get enough credit. The amount of time those people put in, it's all volunteer work for the most part, but you know, it's just amazing what they do.
Yeah.
The Conservation Fund now, how does that work? Can you kind of navigate me through that? How do the funds from coffee get to the nonprofit organizations?
So there are two ways that we do this. The first way is we have a wildlife fund, meaning that we take nonprofit organizations. We have about approximately 8 of them right now. And depending on how our business goes within the next few years, we'll determine how many we add each year. And we allocate a certain amount of net income to donate to those organizations. Most of those organizations are primarily localized organizations to where my partners and I are located. So primarily in the Southeast, in river lake keeping as well as coastal keepings and public hunting lands. You know, public hunting lands, for the most part, is managed by the federal government. But as far as our waters are concerned, most of that is handled by nonprofit organizations. So that's one way. The other way is that we partner up with, for lack of a better word, influencers or celebrities who have foundations that they are very attached to. So we just partnered up with a professional bass fisherman over the last couple of months, and we're actually about to go through a rebranding of our line and our brand to where one of our coffee lines is branded with his namesake and his trademarks and his logos. And we take a pretty significant percent of those sales and give it all to his foundation, right? So that one's very specific. So we're using the likeness of this individual as well as his brand and his influence power to sell his specific line of coffee offered by us to give back a pretty large percentage, actually, to his nonprofit organization. And his nonprofit organization takes kids in at-risk and urban areas who have very little access to fishing and gives them the ability to actually go out and do that. So those are the two ways that we pursue giving back and focus on wildlife conservation today, right? So we have a goal of what we want to do tomorrow, next year, and so forth, but today that's where we are.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, I think that's amazing. I like that idea of helping those troubled youth. I think that's something up here in Canada that we should adapt as well. I don't know of any organizations that are doing that, but that's a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Because look, if it's one thing that cures a lot of ailments, it's really being outside, right?
There's
nothing quite the same. You can absolutely hate fishing, but the first time you catch that monster, that 4 or 5 pound bass, even a little one, even a little bluegill, you know, that really brings and sparks a certain amount of joy in practically everybody.
So it does. We
know how much. Yeah, absolutely. So we know the effect of that. And that's where we really want to get back. It's not just about preserving our lands and waters. It's also about preserving the traditions, right?
Yeah.
Because if we don't do that, it's going to die.
Yeah, man, I agree with you 100%. I mean, who doesn't like to fish? We grew up on the coast of BC, so fishing was just second nature to us. It was something we definitely took for granted. I don't remember the very first fish I ever caught, but I bet if you were to ask one of my parents, they would definitely remember. And it's the same with my children. We have 3 young children. We're all involved in the outdoors from the time they were born. I remember having my daughter in my backpack when she was 4 weeks old out in the bush. And, you know, all 3 of them have been fishing and caught fish before they were 4 years old. So it's that kind of kinship to nature. That's something my wife and I hold dear to us and value. With her late dad being an outdoorsman as well, the connection to the wild is a legacy we definitely want to live on. So, but anyway, you guys mentioned your hands-on with the coffee selection. Can you kind of walk me through that? How does that work? You know, do you travel around the world testing different coffees, or what does that kind of entail, the process of coffee selection?
So let's not say you guys, because I'll be very honest with you, Kevin,
okay.
Is that I'm not a coffee snob. You know, for the most part, I can drink practically any coffee, okay? I can't sit here and say that our coffee is the best or the worst or better or not as good. I just know that our coffee is good. Our customers love our coffee. My partner goes around the world, and he sources directly from bean farm owners, coffee farm owners, okay? He doesn't go through the middlemen. He doesn't go through brokers. He goes straight to the farm. He ensures that they're being ethically grown. Not only that, but their employees are being ethically treated as well.
Yeah,
right?
when you say ethically grown, what do you mean by that?
Well, that's kind of one and the same, is that ethically grown means that the employees are ethically treated.
Right.
So we know that there are a lot of farms and countries all around the world where the farm owners will provide very little pay and very little accommodation for the employees who are actually picking the beans. You know, the process of picking the beans takes quite some time. So when the beans are ready to harvest, the employees will come onto the land. They'll live there. They'll harvest it, and then they'll leave the land once that's done. Most places don't offer these employees, these pickers, a humane place to live, eat, and spend time when they're on the farm, right? Is that they'll give them not even the bare minimum. They'll give them whatever skirts the farmers and the owners' pockets by, and the employees will suffer from it. But what other choice do they have, right? If that's the only thing that's available to them to earn an income, they'll do it. So we do ensure that our farms treat their employees ethically, meaning that they give them hot water, running water, warm place to stay, cool place to stay, food to eat, whatever else it is, then make sure that they have the quality of living that exceeds the standard of the industry.
They're right.
Also, we also make sure that our beans are organically grown. Now, you know, I'll be the first to tell you that the word organic and natural and all that stuff is quite buzzwordy in the Western world, right? In our world, that word means, I guess it has this posh meaning to it, but the reality of it is that things can be grown organically without having a certification, especially in countries where governments don't have regulatory bodies to place that certification on the farms. But we make sure that these beans are grown with either no insecticide or herbicide or organically organic insecticide or herbicide. So our beans are organically grown by organically, quote-unquote, and they're ethically sourced. So once we get the beans, we bring them back to the stateside. And by the way, our beans come from both Southeast Asia and South America. We bring them back stateside. My partner, they'll roast them, and that's where we sell them from.
Right. Oh, cool.
That was the most uninteresting story. Sorry, man.
No. Nope.
You know, beans are beans, man.
Yeah, well, and you know, I'm kind of the same way where, you know, to me, I mean, you know, coffee's coffee. I mean, you guys have four flavors of coffee. You know, I've tried them all, and, you know, they're all great. I mean, you've got the white-tailed deer medium roast, the blue marlin dark roast, the grizzly high-octane dark roast. There's another one, the Trash Bandit Donut Shop. That Trash Bandit Donut Shop, I actually never even got to try. My wife, she drank it on me before I even got to it. So,
well, that's good. So we actually will have a total of 8 different roasts by the year's end.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Right. And, you know, we're doing a little bit of restructuring on the different flavors and the profiles that we have, but we're going to introduce flavored coffee as well before the year end.
Oh, great. Yeah, well, I'll look out for this. I noticed that Trash Bandit Donut Shop, it must be a fan favorite because it's completely sold out.
It's a tough time, right? Is that we're in the process of rebranding. So as a small new business, you know, we kind of have to make the decision of between balancing old inventory and getting ready to usher in new inventory.
Right.
Right. Trash Bandit is popular and so is Whitetail. But, you know, I'll actually send you a sample of what our new branding will look like after we get off the podcast here. But it's night and day, Kevin. We're really excited to do what we're about to do. We're about to launch a partnership and line with Mossy Oak, if you're familiar with Mossy Oak.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And the gentleman I was telling you about earlier with his foundation for at-risk kids, his name is Mike Iaconelli. With the Ike brand. So we're launching a couple of really large brands and rebranding our current line and just doing a whole new relaunch to really focus on what it is that we want to do, and that's to create a brand that really focuses and appeals to not just hunters and anglers of today, but also future hunters and anglers. And if you don't mind, let me get into a little tangent here. Look, I don't know how it is in Canada, but here in the United States, most of us in hunting and fishing, we're typically what most people consider politically conservative, right?
Yep.
But the reality of it is that as our kids grow older and as our grandkids are born and grow older, they become more liberal as we become more progressive. If we don't make that connection between what we do today to them, it's going to be very tough to continue our traditions. Because look, here in the United States, somebody who's liberal may never know or have access to a person who is either willing or that they're comfortable enough to go talk to teach them how to hunt, right?
Yep.
So these are things that we really want to bridge. We want to bridge these gaps to where, okay, well, you know, we can keep this low profile, not too snobby of a brand look, but we can't get anywhere with that. We know that first we have to be a coffee and a brand company before we can really make that outreach happen, especially to the other side, right? So, look, outdoorsmanship transcends or should transcend political spectrums, and that's what we really want to do.
Well, yes, you're right. In my community of hunters and fishermen, the greater percentage of them do share conservative values. I've never heard anyone or anyone I know anyway inside my hunting community talk about bridging the gap like that. But it's a valid point and a discussion I think that should be discussed because, like you said, not all hunters and fishermen are conservative. And in true stewardship, we should all be striving for the same common goals. Because to the best of my knowledge, wildlife doesn't hold a political stance. Although I'm sure there are some that might argue that.
Well, if you're familiar with our Second Amendment here in the United States, I'm sure you're familiar with it. Right?
Yeah, I have the. Obviously, sure. Okay, we all have the basics of it.
Sure. Well, look, in the hunting industry and the firearms industry, it's almost an all or nothing, meaning that there can be no gift, there can be no connection between us and the other side. But if we continue to go that path in sportsmanship, because look, hunting draws a crowd who are typically very pro-Second Amendment here in the United States. That makes it very difficult for us to bridge that divide between us and a more liberal and progressive group of people. But if we continue that tradition, we're going to lose everything that we fought so hard for. Look, there used to be a piece of land that I hunted here in North Georgia called the Altoona WMA. Once upon a time, it was abundant and full of deer. Now, I hadn't hunted a thing in over a decade. I went back to that piece of land last year, and there were nothing but homes built on it. All of our public land in that area have either been decimated or there have been so many developments in the area where it's pushed deer so far away from where hunters can access that land is no longer viable to hunt on a regular basis.
Right.
So these are things that we do care about, right? These are things that not only us as conservative people should care about, it should be something that progressives care about as well. Because look, as much as they love deer and we love deer too, whether, you know, it's on our grill or them being alive and visiting our yards, the reality of it is that look, you know, we have to manage our game. I literally hit an 8-point buck with my car about a week ago, right? And it didn't die. It fortunately or unfortunately managed to get up and run away. And then I went out next morning to see if I could find it. There was another deer that was hit about 500 feet away from where I hit that deer. Our population of deer has become so thick, they're overrunning our suburbs in getting people into accidents. Not only are deer doing that, but we're having hogs and coyotes destroying lands as well, right? So we can manage the population and still be kind to the population to where we can find balance to have our hunters happy, at the same time, have our progressive group understand where us hunters, where our perspectives are, and have them participate as well. Because there's a reason why we hunt. There's a reason why we manage populations. It's there for a reason. That's what we hope to do in the next few years is to go beyond just being a coffee company and go beyond just donating to a foundation, but to really be active involved in these type of efforts to bridge those divides between the two spectrums.
Yeah, well, that's great, man. So one question here, not to take away from the life of the deer or anything, but when you said eight-point deer?
You mean the one I hit?
Yeah, you hit an 8-point.
Yes.
Now
is that
8 points total or 8-1 side? I know you guys measure deer a little differently than we do up here. We measure the one horn that has the most points on it. So when you say 8-point deer, I'm thinking that deer must have been a giant.
No, our 8-pointers, doesn't matter how much on any side, it's the total.
Total points, gotcha.
Right, but again, we also measure deer in a rather strange way depending on which lands you hunt well, right? So, you know, for example, one of the forests that I hunt here in Georgia, we have a quality Madison hunt. And a quality buck, in our case, would be 4 points on one side with those points being a minimum of 1 inch. So a deer can have 4 points on one side and 1 point on the other, and that's considered a quality deer, whereas we could look at a 275-pound buck that's got 3 points on each side, which is 6 point total for us. We can't shoot it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how we're the same up here. Whereas, you know, like for mule deer, for instance, we have a 4-point season, whereas it has to have 4 points on one side. It can have 4 points on one side and one on the other, and it could be, you know, a small little deer, or it could be, you know, a giant 3x3, and we couldn't. It's not legally allowed to be harvested.
Well, and let me clarify on that too, Kevin. Is that, you know, I say that and I poke fun at that, but the reality of it is that our wildlife technologists and our wildlife biologists, they've done an excellent job on quality deer management here in Georgia, at least. Just a decade ago, I would hunt the mountains in Georgia and our bucks would be the size of a collie dog. Today, this season, I was taking a look at the Facebook page and these guys are pulling 14 pointers out of the mountains now, right? So whatever it is that they're doing, as silly as I may think it is, they're doing an excellent job.
Yeah. You guys, I talked to Michael Lee with Backwoods Life recently, and we touched on that, your guys' land management stuff down in Georgia. And yeah, you guys definitely do, I feel, a better job of deer management than we do up here. But, you know, to our defense, we do have a lot of species up here, whereas, you know, maybe deer aren't looked at as high quality as, you know, an elk or a moose or a bighorn sheep or the other animals.
Yeah, that's understandable. I know a lot of us Georgia guys will try to either head out west or get a lottery from Kentucky or Tennessee.
Yeah.
So I understand that.
Yeah. How about yourself? Do you got any dream hunts that you'd like to partake in the future?
You know, so not necessarily. I don't really consider myself I'm not a trophy hunter. I more enjoy the time that I get out in the woods or on the water than I actually do getting either to kill or to catch. I do have one dream hunt, so let me correct myself. I would love to go out in Maryland to hunt for some Sitka deer. And my best friend lives up in that area, but because of COVID-19, unfortunately that trip for this year is going to be postponed until next year. That season, I believe, is at the end of December and early January. So I'll miss that opportunity this year. Yeah, I will eventually head out west to hunt elk. But be honest with you, Kevin, when I come out here and I hunt whitetail, I can't imagine that any other hunt would be any more or any less exciting. I love eating whitetail deer. I love supporting my local public lands, and I enjoy the camaraderie of the hunters that I have come to know and continue to come to know here in the state. So, I get it. A lot of guys like to travel and hunt, but for myself, you know, I just enjoy being there.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, man. For me, there are certain hunts, you know, those father-son or grandfather-son. You know, the three-generation hunts are very special. Typically, I look for quantity over quality, except when it comes to mule deer. With muleys, I'll always sacrifice a muley tag in hopes for that 200-inch buck.
And look, I get it. You know, I actually see the largest buck on my land. So I own 4 acres where I live, and my neighbors also own 4 acres, and we have just these massive, massive groups walking onto my land throughout the entire year, but I won't shoot them. We live really close to suburbs, and that really scares the crap out of people. And, yeah. You know, I know that it's my right to be able to hunt my land if I wanted to. But quite frankly, because I have so much public land available to me in Georgia, I'd just rather not. I'd rather keep the peace with my neighbors. I'm not saying that any other hunters need to do that. That's just my preference.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a lot of hunters, I think, that lack decorum. So it's refreshing to talk to those who do have it. So
what about yourself? Do you do any fishing? I know you hunt. Do you do any fishing at all?
You know, I don't do as much fishing as I used to. Like I said, I grew up on the coast, so my life from about 4 years old till I was in my early 20s was the majority of it was actually spent fishing. And you know, we grew up on the west coast, the Pacific Ocean, and I actually commercial fished for a number of years. So I had my lifelong fill of fishing out there. You know, we caught 70-pound spring salmon, you know, 30-pound steelhead, and you know, 300-pound halibut and stuff like that. And we did a lot of river fishing, and we didn't do as much lake fishing down here. I do a lot of lake fishing with my kids. I don't get as much enjoyment out of it as they do, but you know, my enjoyment comes from just the look on their face when they catch a fish. It's pretty amazing.
Well, so here, I'll give you a story. I took my son out last year. We have a day, maybe two or three, in each one of our public lands to where we are allowed to bring our kids out for a youth hunt. So it's actually before rifle season starts. The kids and disabled people and seniors can go out and they can have their fair game. I took my son out for his first hunt last year. I parked my truck on top of a yellow jacket's nest. So do you guys have yellow jackets in Canada?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I'm sorry for my ignorance there, but we open the door and we start to dress up, get our rifles out, and all of a sudden we start getting hit by yellow jackets. We got hit by them so hard that we couldn't re-enter the truck. We actually had to run several hundred yards away just to clear those yellow jackets. So my son, at this point, he might have had a dozen stings on him.
Oh, no.
I run back to the truck. Right. And he's allergic to the outside, okay? So I run back to the truck, manage to not get any of these yellow jackets in the truck. I drive back, grab him, and I look at him. I said, we kind of have this nervous laughter together. I look at him and said, hey, we might as well finish the hunt, right? He said, yeah, Dad, let's go ahead and finish the hunt.
Oh, what a trooper.
So I go to a different spot. That poor trooper walked through stinging nettles.
How old is he?
He's 15 this year. He was 14 last year.
Right.
So by the end of that hunting trip, we couldn't go straight home. We actually had to go to the ranger's office for some Benadryl, because he was swollen. Between the yellow jackets and the stinging nettles, he's thrown in his trooper towel, and I can understand.
Yeah, definitely. I would have long before he did.
But he held out very well, so I'm proud of him. My daughter also hunts with me. She's been hog hunting with me, but this year we're actually going to take her out. She's 13. We're going to take her out and let her get her first deer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool, yeah, man.
So, yeah, I gotta cool. love it when kids love it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. How old's your daughter?
She's 13.
13. How old? What's the legal age to hunt down in Georgia?
Doesn't matter.
Oh,
so
really?
As long as they're with an adult before they become of age that requires a license, then they can hunt supervised, of course. You know, my daughter, She's really the outdoors person out of my kids. She got her captain's license at 12, so she can boat me around. She can boat herself around, and she does a really good job. She's a qualified captain. She knows the lake very well. She knows how to fish it very well. And you know, she started hog hunting this year, and she'll start deer hunting this year. So yeah. Definitely a trooper too. So I'm glad to be able to pass that on to my kids and that they're receptive to it. Of course, my son's on a hiatus right now.
Wow, well, give them a high five for me. That's awesome. Yeah, you know, the ability to share these experiences, marvel in everything the outdoors has to offer is a real blessing. I'm glad to hear that you get the opportunity to share them with your kids. That's awesome.
Right.
Well, you know, I told you I wouldn't hold you up for too long today. So, again, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast today and telling all us Canadians about Outfitter Coffee. It's been a real treat having you on here today, and we definitely look forward to the new line coming out. I know I'll be checking your website frequently to see when I can purchase some new products.
Deb, I appreciate you having me. I apologize my other partners couldn't be here. They're actually all over the different states in the Southeast right now. And with COVID, it's a little bit hard to logistically bring us all together. But by the way, before we get off the podcast here, how are you all doing in Canada with the pandemic?
Yeah, we're doing good up here. Like you guys are struggling with the second wave right now, but I think for the most part, people are abiding by the restrictions set out by our healthcare workers, so it's good. But, you know, some are a bit pugnacious when new restrictions come out, but I think it's something we'll all get through together. And the next time we talk, hopefully this is all behind us.
I hope so, too.
Where can we find you?
Well, you can find us at outfitterscoffeeco.com. At the end of this year, it'll be outfitterscoffee.com. We're starting to spread across retailers in the United States, and hopefully we'll be able to cross borders in 2021. So you'll be able to find us online. If not, request your local gun shop or your local tackle shop, pro shop, to carry our coffee.
Yeah, definitely. Will do. Okay, thanks, buddy. Again, I really appreciate your time, and we'll talk soon.
All right, thanks, Kevin.
Okay, talk to you later. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.